Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fuckadelics? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? How was the game for you yesterday? I have to be honest, and I've said this before without condescension, it means nothing to me. I should say it meant nothing to me, but I am recording this Sunday, hours before the big game that many of you spent your day enjoying, yelling about, eating things, judging commercials, you know, armchair quarterbacking, whatever, you know, doing opioids and missing half of it. I don't know. I don't know what your Super Bowl day looked like, but I spent the day cooking, and if everything went as planned yesterday, because it hasn't happened yet, I had a little birthday party for Sarah the painter here at the house, and I cooked a lot of Indian food during the day. I like to cook, man. I know you know that I do if you listen to this, if you're still with me, but I like to, when you have to cook for people and you want to try something new, and the whole process of reading recipes, putting them together in your head, figuring out how they are supposed to work, what it's going to look like, what it's going to taste like. Very exciting, because you can spend hours doing that. And if you make a very complicated recipe and you spend hours doing it and you're very excited about it, and then it doesn't taste quite good, the intensity of the disappointment is profound, to the point where sometimes you just throw the entire pot of whatever you made right in the garbage or disposal. You know, like, you're getting back at it. I've had that happen. Did I mention Anderson .Paak is on the show today? Anderson .Paak is a hip hop artist. As you know, hip hop is not necessarily my thing, but I have nothing against it. If you look in my music back before Apple Music, where you actually had to upload all your shit, I've got a lot of hip hop in there, but it's pretty mainstream stuff. A lot of Kanye, a lot of Jay-Z. I've got some Pharrell in there, but I go back. I got some Cypress Hills, some Ghetto Boys. I got the Wu-Tang. You know, I got I definitely have stuff. You know, I had Open Mike Eagle here to sort of school me on the newer kind of alternative hip hop. I'm not adverse to it. I enjoy it. I listen to it. I've got all the Kendrick records. Yeah, I mean, I listen, but it's not fundamentally my go-to stuff. I've got some Gil Scott Heron, not theoretically, not class, not hip hop, but inspirational, right? Kind of moved in that direction, kind of, you know what I'm saying. But like, as you know, when I talk to the Beastie Boys, I don't know my history. I don't know any of, you know, where it came from or how, but I enjoy it. So Anderson .Paak, I actually did a thing with him. I had to apologize to him for that. He was at an event that I hosted for Flea over at the Silver Lake Conservatory. He was the headlining act, and I didn't know who he was. And I believe I brought him up as Andrew .Paak. So I'm going to set that straight with Mr. .Paak. But the fortunate thing about having Anderson on, or having the opportunity to have him on, I mean, he is nominated for Best Rap Performance at the Grammy Awards, which is this Sunday, February 10th, for his single Bubblin'. And the new album, Oxnard, is out now. But he's only got like four or five records out. So I was really able to get up to speed and enjoy it and get it. And he's great. He's a great artist. And he's a guy who, started out as a player. I mean, like a player, like a musician, like a drummer. I was excited to talk to him. And I never know how it's going to go. I didn't really know him, but we had a great conversation. So Anderson .Paak is my guest, and it was fun. I need these conversations, man. If I've been shooting Glow, and if I go without talking to people, like I did a couple interviews yesterday, and I need them. I can get way up into my head. I can really spin some shit. I can really spin, existentially spin myself corkscrew right into the dead center of the dark earth. And it's just the nature of who I am. You know, and I don't want to bring anyone down with me. And, you know, sometimes I'll do that in my personal life. So like when I just talk to new people and engage in these things, I'm thrilled to be out of myself and into somebody else's life and stories. So it's been good lately. I actually had a weird thing happen. There's weird decisions we make I've learned something. Like, I'm sort of hung up on a couple of things. Like, I was interviewing someone in here the other day. Oh, before I get into that, first of all, my dates coming up at Dynasty Typewriter are almost sold out. I have, you know, dates coming up on the February 10th. These are Sundays, the 17th, the 24th, and March 17th at the Dynasty Typewriter here in L.A. But they're close to selling out. You can go see if you can get tickets. But I think all those shows are about sold out. I don't know about the shows in Aspen, March 23rd at the Wheeler Opera House. I don't know where that's at. Or Boulder, the Boulder Theater on March 24th. I don't know where those are at, but all my UK dates are selling very well. If you're in the UK or Ireland, those are coming up and they're on sale now. The Lowry in Salford, England, Royal Festival Hall in London. The Lowry's April 4th, Royal Festival Hall April 6th, the Rep Theatre in Birmingham, England, April 8th, and the Vicar Street in Dublin on April 11th. They're selling well, but I think there's still tickets, so go grab those. So that's done. What else? Oh, I'm not trying to hide anything from you people. When you read about me being attached to something, a movie or something, you never know until these things are real when they're real. Like, I know I was in the Joker movie. I know that I did that. I know that I walked down a hallway a few times with Robert De Niro talking to him into a room, where Joaquin Phoenix was. And I know that happened. I know I was on that set. I don't know, how much of that will make the movie. You never know these things, but I know it'll happen. There was an announcement about a movie that I don't even necessarily need to draw attention to because I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen or it's not. So I'm not holding back. I'll let you know when I know it's for real. One thing I do know, and I don't want to give you too much information, is I had someone on my show, on this show, coming up, and I did his show. And that was a very big deal. It's a very big deal, and it's exciting. There might be some hints of it out there, but I'm not able to promote it yet. But it's very, it's sort of a big fucking deal. And that's all I'm going to tell you. I don't want to give it away. And that's coming up. And that reminds me of what I was going to tell you. So I had a guest in here. And it's weird how, sometimes you're just trying to do the right thing and it could turn into a disaster. I had a guest in here and I finish up with her. In here, and like right as I turn the mics off, I hear my fucking fire alarm going on in the house. So I'm like, wait here, let me go check this out. I run into the house. I run all over I smell for smoke, no smoke. I run all over the downstairs. I go upstairs, look for smoke, smell, no smoke. I run down into the crawl space in the basement where there's a smoke alarm, smell, no smoke. No, I'm like, what the fuck is happening? I turn it off with my finger. The fire trucks are not, I don't think they've been dispatched. I have no idea how long it's been and I can't figure it out. I say goodbye to my guest. I go back into the house and then I go into the bathroom downstairs and I realize I had used it, and out of respect for the possibility that my guest might need to use it, I lit a candle. And that's what could have had the entire fire department at my house. The fact that I went to the bathroom and I wanted to be nice, it could have cost the city, thousands of dollars to dispatch. It cost me, a taxpayer, it didn't happen. They didn't show up at my door all ready to go. And I didn't have to say, I'm sorry. I took a shit and I just lit the smelly candle I'm sorry. Yeah. But I feel better and I think I did the right thing. But you guys, I hope you, I'm sorry. Yeah. So you can just get back on the truck. But didn't happen. The other thing I was thinking about, if I could, is denial. This is what I'm sort of hung up on this because it seems to be a problem in the culture we live in. I'm trying to assess these larger problems, through my own lens to understand myself, that people will buy what they believe, even if it's bullshit, despite facts. We all have the mechanism for that. And I got a little obsessed with this the other day because I bought some fish. I bought a nice piece of steelhead. Wild steelhead. I ate half of it. And then a couple days later, I was looking forward all day to cooking the other half of my slab of steelhead fish. And I get home and I don't have anything else to eat. That's going to be my dinner. And I open it up and it's a little discolored in some places. This is fish. It's a, you know, steelhead is almost a salmon-y looking fish. And it was kind of gray in one area, you know, but I was like, is that fat? I mean, that's probably fat. I don't remember noticing it. And then there was a little spot that seemed to be growing, like it was something on the fish. And I'm like, that's probably, I don't know. It's probably all right. So, and I smelled it and it didn't smell to me in that moment to be terrible. So I'm going to follow through and cook this fucking fish because I want to believe it's okay. And I'm cooking it, and I slice off the little patch of weird thing on it, you know, the spot that is something. It's fish. It's not cheese. But I'm like, you know, it didn't smell bad. And there's a gray patch on it. I mean, what the fuck is wrong with me? I wanted so badly to eat that fish and for it to be good that I cooked it all the way through. I put it on a plate. I took one bite and I spit it out and threw it away. And I said, what the fuck is wrong with me? Why would I let myself, you know, do that? I knew in my heart that it was bad right when I opened the goddamn wrapper that it was wrapped in. But I wanted to believe. But fortunately, today I do not have food poisoning because of my belief, or worse, some sort of botulism could have fucked my whole brain up. I could have botulized my brain into complete stupidity, and you know, next week I might believe Pizzagate. The other thing I was thinking about in talking about false equivalence, I'm a little obsessed with the idea of that too, on a personal level. You know, false equivalence is a tactic that, you know, primarily shitty people use, or powers that be, you know, to justify, you know, shitty behavior. It's like if a factory is polluting a river and the townspeople are trying to shut it down, and the factory owner is like, wait a minute, there are bums that live near the river and they pee in the water all the time. Why isn't the town doing anything about that? Right? False equivalence. Or Trump saying that the people who were beating up Nazis were just as bad as the Nazis, right? Or another example, Al Gore wants to stop climate change, but he flies on a plane, is another classic of false equivalence. It is a way somehow to get regular people, again, to feel like they're making a point and that they're smart in condemning progress or doing things that might save us, as opposed to siding with monsters, both corporate and human, for the ongoing destruction of all things that we've grown used to. But again, I'm looking at myself, and where does the appetite for that come from? And I think we all use some version of it, you know, in the form of rationalizing our place in life. That, you know, if you're dissatisfied about anything, right? Which we all are on some level, but you know, it can get big. Sometimes it's small, sometimes it's big. I think people do it every day. It's like, I could have been a rock star if I just, you know, bought an amp. You know, I could have been a rock star if I just spent a little time with an instrument of some kind. I could have been a rock star if I knew how to sing. You know, they're somehow self-jilted or slightly entitled or bitter or cynical or lazy or, you know, dumb justifications for our own failures. We all do it. I could have been a painter if I'd just taken those classes in college. But now I'm not. I don't do anything. I don't do anything. I just, like, I sit around and see other people and I judge myself against them because I could do almost anything that anybody else can do. Even billionaires, if I just applied myself somehow. You probably couldn't have done it. There's no reason to make those comparisons if you're not going to do it or you didn't do it, you know, other than to justify your own anger, misery, cynicism, or bitterness. But those, I think, that kind of mindset, if you live in that stuff, false equivalencies are very satisfying, even if you're on the wrong fucking team or you're fighting for the wrong shit. It's like, yeah, fuck that. What about the bums who pee? Huh? Dummies. Still a lot of emails coming in about the Steely Dan business. Yeah, I had Hey 19 stuck in my head for a couple of days, but I'm not in a rabbit hole. I'm just integrating it into the things I no longer judge and now understand and may even enjoy a little bit. But this is an interesting one because maybe I don't know what I'm putting out in the world. I got an email that subject line, What the fuck, Mark? Dot, dot, dot. If only I'd known you didn't like Steely Dan the last 2 years. And then the email, this changes everything. Really? Not really. From a 65-year-old regular listener who is over all the hand-wringing about aging. You're kind of boring us with it at this point. Catherine. Am I hand-wringing? I feel like I'm accepting aging rather well. And how is this connected to the Steely Dan thing? I'm not wringing my hands. I'm experiencing it. And I'm not freaking out about it. I don't know what you're projecting, but you are 10 years older than me. So maybe you're seeing something I'm not seeing. I hope when I'm your age that I can be where you're at. And if it's too much, Catherine, you know, I do like Steely Dan now. And I'm okay with my age. Seriously. All right. Anderson .Paak, it was great. I never know how these things are going to go, and I was excited because I enjoyed the music, but I didn't know how he would be. I never know how anyone's going to be, I thought it was a great conversation. As I mentioned before, he's nominated for the best rap performance at the Grammy Awards this Sunday, February 10th, for his single "Bubblin'," and his new record "Oxnard" is available wherever you get music. It's a good record. Malibu's a good record. Venice is a good record. And he's a good guy. So this is me talking to Anderson .Paak. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. You know, honestly, I think I owe you an apology.
Why?
Do you remember we were on a show together at the Silver Lake Conservatory? Oh. I was hosting that show.
Chili Peppers.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I brought you up.
Okay.
As Andrew .Paak.
Story of my life.
I had no... But like, I'm a comic, you know, and I know that's like the worst when someone... You're just waiting there to go on, and some guy just mangles your fucking name, and you're like, oh,
you gotta
man.
Work your way up.
Just
there.
Disrespect right out of the gate.
I am a Grammy nominated SoundCloud.
Andrew .Paak,
and
ladies and gentlemen.
Andrew .Paak.
Andrew .Paak.
It's better than, man.
Yeah, no, I guess I don't know if you've gotten it.
I missed it, man. I was going through a lot that day.
You were?
Yeah, my newest son, he was born that day.
That day?
Yeah.
So, okay, so you didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit.
You didn't even notice me.
Yeah. I was just, you know, happy to be out of the hospital for a second. And
How many do you have?
I have two.
Okay.
Yeah, he's one, and then my oldest is eight.
Oh, and that happened that day, and you still showed up for the benefit.
I had to do it, man.
Did you mention that? I don't think you did. I think you just got in it. I think you got on the drums pretty quick.
Yeah, I got on the drums real quick. And
how'd you get involved with that organization?
I met Flea. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I'm a huge fan of the Chili Peppers, and I think I reached out to Flea one time on Twitter or something, and he was a big fan, and
we
just started chopping it up from there. Yeah, and then we met over in South America, and we partied with them. And
you met in South America?
Yeah, well,
just hanging out.
We were on a tour at Lollapalooza in South America.
They have a Lollapalooza in South America.
Yes, can you believe that?
I every time I hear about shows in South America, there's always like 900,000 people there.
Oh my God!
Like you do a show and there's a million people.
You talk about real fans.
Yeah, I mean, was it like that? Where were you? In Buenos Aires?
I was in Brazil, Argentina.
Yeah.
Chile.
And they come out.
They come out, man. They were waiting at the hotel with the, you know, whole thing.
Yeah, playing arenas?
No, it was like this big outdoor situation.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I've been playing arenas lately, though.
That's crazy,
I'm in that weird middle ground where...
That's a middle ground?
Well, no.
What's next?
What I mean?
Entire states?
Well, no, yeah, seriously. But you know, it's like you can't. They can't hold all the fans in like a, you know, 4,000, 3,000 seater.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
You can't necessarily go to the 10,000, 12,000. So you kind of have to. You're in this kind of.
Oh, so what's an arena?
Well, I guess it's. I thought arenas were like, you
18,
know,
20,000.
Me too, but I think they kind of, you know, arenas, whatever.
You're in the smaller arenas. You're not. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. You're working up to large arenas.
Yeah, like 10K. You know, we're working it up, man.
It's like I do small theaters, like 800-900 seats. You're like, I'm in small arenas.
I'm more into miniature arenas.
Yeah.
Are you? We're doing a miniature arena.
I noticed. I noticed on the new record that you sampled Rodney Dangerfield.
I'm, yeah.
Are you?
I love that kind of comedy, man.
Out of nowhere, I'm just listening to it. And I'm like, holy fuck, that's Rodney.
That's right, man. One of the best.
Like, how do you come up with a Rodney sample? You're just sitting around.
I mean, I like came up on that. Like, I grew up watching, you know. Like MTV, and I remember he would be on MTV sometimes. I remember he had that movie Ladybugs,
where he made
his son dress in drag to win the
oh my god,
the soccer tournament.
I don't even remember that. I remember Back to
his
School.
His son was a sick soccer player, but I can't remember the premise. But somehow he put his wig on his son, so they can win the.
And that stuck in your head.
Yeah, and then I just remember, like, you know, we just love watching all the old clips of him and like comedians like Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
just no setup. It's just like boom, you know.
Yeah,
this is
jokes.
It.
Bing, bing,
love it.
Bing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think Andrew Dice Clay was on the Rodney Dangerfield like young comedians show.
Oh, he put him on.
Yeah, but like, you know, you're just sitting around the studio and you decide like, no, we need a Rodney joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm always looking for little pieces like that to. In between the songs, but the thing that came in with this album was sample clearances, which I had no clue what was until I got on a major label, and now I just can't throw little clips of surf clips or little random excerpts because they want publishing or they want 30,000.
Yeah.
Shouts out to Rodney Dangerfield's wife. She liked the song, so she cleared it, you know? But that was the only one that fucking ended up making the album because everything else, you know, was so expensive. Yeah.
Oh, really? So you had to send her the song?
Yeah, yeah. So I got all these people, you know, when you're doing your album, you know, once it's done.
Which song was it? It was
Trippy.
Oh, okay.
Featuring J. Cole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I put that on there. I love what he's saying because, you know, I can relate to that. You know, he's talking about he's no ladies' man. Like,
right.
You know, one time a girl told me, come over. There's nobody home. I went over.
There was nobody home.
That was fire. And then a soul song comes in, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so awesome. And I went, the J. Cole's on that song.
Yeah.
And I remember where we were making the song, he was talking about how when he went to in high school, he was the big man on campus.
Uh-huh.
He had all the ladies. And then when he went to college, this big college, he was a nobody, you know.
Sure.
He didn't play ball or nothing. And
yeah.
All the other guys were getting all the girls, and you know,
and that he knew the feeling.
Yeah, we could relate.
So it set the tone.
Yeah,
I just love that Rodney's wife had to sit there and listen to it.
Yeah, she's like, I'm feeling this. Yeah. All right, go ahead, man.
Use
30,000. We'll give it to you.
30,000.
Nah, nah, nah.
That's the most that record's ever made.
And you know, it was he was on the
Carson.
Yeah, it was a Carson. Yeah,
you didn't have to clear it with NBC.
Dude, I hope they cleared. I hope they. They did due diligence. I'm pretty sure no one's coming after me. So
that's a real problem, though, in terms of like it really.
It can be a problem.
You used to not worry about it and just take the hit. I mean, didn't people come after you?
Well, we weren't making any money enough for people to really care. It wasn't really on the radar enough. So
which records, like before Venice?
Malibu, Venice.
Oh, even those?
Yeah, even those had all kinds of little excerpts and samples and stuff. And some people came back. But what happens if you don't make the attempt to clear it? That's when people get pissed. So you don't clear it and you put it out for sale, then that's when you have people coming out the woodworks like, I want all my bread. You made a lot of money from this and all this stuff. So they, you know, not everybody has the stamina to go to court and all this stuff. And sometimes you can work it out, but it's just so much easier to do that stuff before. But then it takes time, and these all the new things that I never really thought about.
Well, didn't you have some hits on Malibu? You did.
Oh
right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but you didn't have any samples in there.
I mean, we definitely had some samples, but the clearing process was just, you know, we did a lot of the clearing after the fact.
Hey, man, what's up? I got to ask you something. I mean, don't get mad.
Exactly. Exactly, man. So my lawyers
I've always been a fan of your shit, and I use some of it.
Is it cool, man? I mean, three tours later, I just got back from South America. Everything's lovely on this end, but I just want to know, it's like...
But I guess that, like, I mean, you don't lean too heavy on it. I mean, you do, like, you got a real band.
Yeah, that's what we're about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like a different, like, because...
Bringing the bands back to hip-hop.
Is that happening? Is that a movement?
I'm pushing for it, man. You know, there's no one playing an instrument, really, that's coming out of hip-hop, per se.
Yeah.
And... you know, rock and roll, God bless, you know, its soul, you know, and it did so much for years. But, you know, now the biggest genre, everything is revolving around hip hop now,
right.
You know.
But you're saying that this is relatively new to just use a full on band?
Well, I think hip hop in the core of its foundation was built off of not having instruments, not being able to afford instruments, so working with what you have. So we want to make a song, but we don't necessarily have keyboards or anything, so we're going to make loops from vinyls, and we're going to put two turntables together and literally make
drum
our
machine.
Own loops in the park and have a party, and then we're going to start busting over that. So I think the foundation of it was always live music, because they were rapping over these break beats, funk and soul, and even like new wave and all kinds of different stuff, whatever was out, you know? And so all those were real instruments, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
So, but I think now it's like, you know, people now when they see instruments, it's almost like, yuck. You know?
Really?
Like, they want to see light shows, and they want to see like...
they just don't care. They just they
content, want, yeah, and they yeah. want to make sure you look cool, and you know what's he dressing like, and is he sexy or is she what's that?
Right.
I don't think all music is like that, but I'm saying like that's a big part of what we're competing against. You know, big music.
Well, general. I mean, there's not that no one's really that interested in the guy stepping up doing a guitar solo anymore.
It's like,
they don't care.
It's
just like
you
just,
know,
yeah.
How many years did we do that though? You know, like it's
but
blues.
It's
you know, like you said, you're a blues guy, you're a rock and roll guy. Oh, yeah. Those dudes ran the industry forever.
Yeah,
was,
no,
I
get it.
Yeah,
but yeah. You know, there's a limit to guitar solos. I'll admit there comes a point where you're like, all right, let's move on a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But
there's a limit to a dude just, you know, screaming on a mic in front of a DJ, too.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I'm at with. I'm like, I come from, I started playing drums first. That's my foundation, so.
But you grew up in Oxnard, mm-hmm. So it took you through, you know, two cities to get to your home city?
Yeah, I had to make some money first.
And you decided
I couldn't come back broke.
No, but I mean the titles. You thought.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah. That's
you,
what I
you
mean.
Thought, well, Venice and Malibu, people are going to want, they're interested in that. And then you're going to throw Oxnard in when you're a little more comfortable. Let's see.
I got more eyes on me, so, you know, I got to put the city on.
It is like Venice, Malibu, Oxnard. Yeah. But like, so you grew up that, how far, Irvine? Where is it?
No, absolutely not. I go to 101 North and you just keep going until you start saying, where the fuck am I?
You still.
Until it starts to smell funny. Oh,
yeah,
sorry. Yeah.
That's all right.
So
yeah.
You just, you hit the 101 North.
It starts to smell funny.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, what the hell is that smell? And that's where I'm
that's
from.
That's Oxnard?
Yeah.
That's why does it smell like that?
It's produce. It's ran by produce. So you got cilantro, strawberries, onions.
Oh, that's it?
Anything can grow there.
Well, that's good smell. That's not terrible.
No,
right?
It's great. It's, you know, but if you're used to.
But
you
if
know,
they're manuring it, then it's bad, right? So you get some cow shit smell too, or no?
Yeah, absolutely. You better.
How'd you end up in Oxnard? How'd your folks end up there?
Oh man, well, our story starts in Korea.
Oh, is that? Oh, we're gonna follow your tats.
We're gonna follow
your arm. You got your whole life story tattooed on your arm.
Well, so far,
I
got it up to a certain point.
Looks like it's been there for a while. You're gonna have to add some.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
you made it look kind of vintage, right?
Yeah.
Oh, son of a bitch!
It's not vintage.
You charged me fucking $5,000 to make it look old.
How old is that?
I just got it.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I'm just
it's looking
cursing
like that.
Out the tattoo artist,
it's
I guess.
It looks like that sort of old sailor style green there. Like it's been there for a while.
Like it's been a couple trips. Yeah.
All
right, it's weathered.
So it starts in Korea.
It starts in Korea.
A yin yang. That's a flag?
That's a Korean flag. Yeah. My mom was born in Korea during the war. So she was an abandoned kid. Her and my uncle were... they presume maybe like someone in the service and my grandmother.
Oh, so your grandmother slept with an American GI kind of deal?
Perhaps maybe a sailor.
Right.
And raised up my mom and my uncle for as long as they could and then abandoned them. From what I hear, there was a mass like I don't know if it's not genocide, but they were going around and kind of getting rid of all the mixed breed kids at this time.
That the Americans left behind.
Yeah.
Really? In South Korea?
Yes.
Huh.
Well, this is during the war, so it was, you know,
things for grabs.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
But yes, so then there was a dude that went around and actually found my mom and my uncle and got them to an orphanage.
In Korea?
In Korea. At which point, my adopted grandparents adopted my mom and my uncle and got them back over to Los Angeles, Compton at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so my grandmother and my grandfather were also in the military, so they were, you know, flying around and traveling.
Uh-huh.
And picked up some kids.
Did you have a relationship with them?
They both passed. Before I was born.
Oh. But Compton, that's where your mom grew up?
She grew up in Compton, Los Angeles, 50s. This is when Compton's pretty much just like farm territory, suburb.
Right.
Wasn't even connected to
what,
the water
unincorporated?
Line. Yeah. Wasn't even,
right.
I don't even consider Los Angeles.
Right, right.
So it was
primarily African American?
No. It was a suburb. It was whites, you know. Really, no one was really out there.
It was just like farms.
It was farms, yeah. But it was a suburb. And yeah. if you were out there, you were doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And so she stayed out there and pretty much was raised in LA up until her teens, and then eventually moved to Oxnard, Ventura County
on her own.
Yes, with her dad and her mom.
Oh, so they all moved out of Compton up to Oxnard. Were they in the farm business?
My grandfather was a pastor. He started pastoring after he got out of the service and started a church in Oxnard. So they all moved out there.
That's where he found his flock?
Yes, Lord. He found his flock. He found his congregation, if you will. You can tell you've never been to church. It's a congregation.
Oh, who calls it a flock? I didn't make that up. You knew what I was talking about.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, his congregation. Yeah. That's right. He found a place where he could peddle his God wares.
Peddle? Yeah, so they're in Oxnard.
Work the Jesus hustle.
Work the Jesus in you and me. And
yeah.
Spread the good word
of
the gospel.
Uh-huh.
He also wrote poetry. He had some poetry books as well.
So was he good?
He was good. He had a way with words.
Yeah. Do you have those books?
I do.
Yeah?
I do.
Was it good?
It was good stuff.
Was it religious?
Yeah, it was. Uh-huh. But it was, you know, smooth.
Yeah. Did you put any of that in the songs?
Yeah, of
any
course.
Of that on Oxnard?
Are you kidding me? Kidding me? So they got to Oxnard and she, you know, she was out there. She met my pops.
Yeah.
Now my pops is also in the Navy.
That's the other side of your arm?
My pops used to work up on the fighter jets. I don't know if you see that. He's got the fighter jet right there.
Oh, yeah, it's fighter jet. I got it. So you got Korea on one side of the arm and this one.
My pops was a twin from Philadelphia. And
he Philly.
From Philly, yep. So he grew up in Philly. And then
Was he flying them or fixing them?
He was fixing them.
Mm-hmm.
Fixing jets. And
during Vietnam?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe he was.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And,
in Philly.
He was stationed out in Korea as well for a little bit. And then eventually went back to Port Hueneme, which is the base where I'm from. They met out there.
Oh, so it's on the water? It must be.
Yes. Yeah, it's a beach town.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
I'm an idiot. So
no,
it's a beach
cool.
town. I should really know a little bit. I don't even know where the Inland Empire is, really.
I.E.?
Yeah, I'm not
Riverside.
Even sure.
Riverside.
Okay, all right.
There's not much going on.
I don't go west.
I wouldn't leave this house if I was you. I would take mushrooms and I would stay here.
Well, the mushrooms are behind me, but maybe I'll leave it open. But I've done them before, it's just not here. But I think I saw this years ago. I saw this house when I was on mushrooms.
Yeah?
I come full circle.
Isn't it crazy how God will show you a little glimpse of your life?
Are mushrooms part of your process?
No, I put that behind me as well.
You did?
I'll do, you know.
Yeah,
it just depends.
Some people, natural stuff, you know. Some people will do it just to clean out the pipes.
Yeah, it's called like a reset.
Yeah,
when
you
take it, it's like, oh, yeah, I needed that.
But then I meet these crazy cats who are like, you know, some of these dudes are doing these micro doses of acid.
No, that's too much.
Well, but they say they don't feel it, but they're doing it every day and they look a little jangly, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, kind of wide open.
They're fried.
Like, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But they're like, I'm not depressed. I'm like, yeah, but you're not even here, bro.
Exactly. You know? Like, you know what today is, man?
So how many kids in your family? You're growing up in Oxnard. Your dad's like out of the military.
So my mom, on the pension?
Yep.
My mom, this is, by the time she got to me and my little sister, was her second one. So she, her first husband, she had my two older sisters. And then she said, done with you. Boom, boom.
He's out.
Got this dude from the Navy from Philly. Boom, boom. Had me and my little sister. And then she was done with him. And I had a stepdad for a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then that didn't last too long, and then...
What happened to your real dad?
My pops, he died. He passed away, I want to say 2006.
Did you have a relationship with him?
I didn't have the... When I was 7 years old, he went off to prison. He got really addicted to drugs and went to prison for assault and battery on my mom.
Ugh.
And he went away after that for 14 years.
Do you remember that? Did you have to live through that shit?
I did remember it. I don't remember anything other than when it actually happened. I was getting babysitted. We were chilling, and we heard screaming and went outside. And he was on top of my mom. There was blood everywhere in the streets.
Damn. Yeah.
And he was just really? Like, go back in the house.
Oh, yeah.
He ran back in the house, and that was the last time I saw him.
Go back in the house, but he's doing out in the front yard?
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted the neighborhood to see, but not you?
I guess he thought he didn't know that his kids were there. So when we came outside, and we're just like, Dad, what's going on? Because before that, I thought everything was straight.
What
like, my mom was really good at keeping the adult business away from the kids. You know,
What was he on? What was he strung out on?
You know, I think my mom, she was really bad alcoholic, and I don't know exactly what drug. Maybe I'm pretty sure maybe it might have been like, you know, maybe crack, maybe cocaine, shit. Yeah. But I think honestly, it was just the wrong influences. You know,
bad crowd.
The blues, man. You know, he went straight up bad crowd. You know, and then when you got the blues,
you're gonna blame it on the blues.
It really was, man. He got kicked out of the Navy for weed or something. Mm-hmm. They honorable discharge.
So he had the blues.
Yeah, he had the blues. Yeah, yeah. And so after that
Philly style.
Philly style, man. So it was downhill after that. He if he couldn't work on the planes and stuff, he wasn't.
Right. So he went to prison. And then you didn't see him.
I didn't see him after that. And then when he got out, we kept in touch for a little bit. But I think he knew he was about to pass. So he was really adamant about trying to get in touch with me. But I was, you know, doing my thing and just getting into music. But I was talking to him. We talked a few times.
Did that feel like closure? I mean,
It did. Yeah, on both our parts.
So you had that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just like, you know, I love you, man. And I was older now, so I kind of see like how it is when you grow up and... Anything can happen, like in life. So it's like, once you know, if you're still alive, you're like, damn, man. Sorry about that whole shit.
I was thinking about this today, like how many lives I've lived. Like, you know, you got one life, but you know, if you've lived in a couple different places, you start to realize that you have more than one in a way.
Yeah.
So is your mom still around?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
so
man.
She gets to see your success.
She's got a crazy story too. Yeah, yeah.
But your stepdad was all right.
Yeah, my stepdad was cool. It's kind of a twisted situation with that too. But my mom and my stepdad ended up going to prison as well.
Now, for what?
So when I was in my senior year, they both went into prison for security.
Fraud?
I don't know if it's security. It might be security fraud. They got caught up with long story short, they weren't paying taxes. Owed a bunch of money.
Right.
Blue collar shit, you know, in Ventura County. But they gave them crazy sentence, like 15. And this is the first offender, but they had to serve 7.5.
Holy shit.
Exactly. So one of those situations.
They both served 7.5 years?
My stepdad served 1 year less, and it's because he started running his mouth and trying to get deals and stuff.
Throwing your mom under the bus?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so we lost connection after that, during that whole time.
I think that's earned.
He earned that.
Yeah,
he
did.
For sure. But, you know. Fuck it, you know?
Yeah.
I've never been to prison.
Well, good.
And so...
You don't have to go.
I don't know what the fuck's going on in his mind, but I don't think that was the best choice. I don't talk to him too much, but I love him, you know? Like, I love him for what he did, for being around, you know? For that time when my pops wasn't there, and then my mom got with him, and then he was a male figure that was around. I thought he was an asshole, but he was around.
But they both go away when you're like in high school.
Yeah.
So who's
my
watching you?
My sisters.
Oh, they're older. Right?
Yeah, my two older sisters were married, are still married, and they quit what they're doing. They come back and take me and my little sister, and we all kind of live together for a little bit until I turn 18, and then I go off and.
And do the thing?
Yes, and I started my flock. I joined my flock.
You found your flock, your congregation.
Yes.
When do you start with the music? Because you weren't doing old style hip hop when you were in high school, right? You were playing?
Hip hop was everything since I was like 6 years old. It ran my world.
It did.
It was everything. Yeah, like Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Tupac, all these people that was along with Nirvana and Offspring and Foo Fighters. I'm 33, I'm like an MTV kid. So
you got it all.
This was the music of life. Like
right.
That was
everybody. There's no color lines.
You didn't. Yeah, when you went to school, it's like who knew every word of the song. Like that was right. What we did for
whatever
hobbies.
Song. But yeah. It wasn't like you didn't have to pick sides.
No,
you didn't have
to pick teams. We were all listening to the same thing.
Isn't that weird? That's what MTV did, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It really sort of it kind of brought everything together.
It was the channel,
yeah.
If you will. You know, this is the portal. If it's coming through here, it's lit, it's dope, we're playing the stuff. Now, you know, they have, you know, there's all kinds of different channels.
But at that time I never really thought about it like that. That, you know, you have like, you know, R&B people, you have rock people, but it seemed like when I was a kid, before MTV, you had your rock people, you had your disco people,
yeah.
But they were different worlds.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like I never really thought about it, but MTV sort of brought it all together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether you agree with the premise of the thing. Or
yeah, it was in your face. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it was all different. Mm-hmm. So you were exposed to everything.
Yep. I also grew up in SoCal, West Coast kid.
Yeah.
You know, the people around me were into a lot of listening to everything.
Sure.
Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
My teachers, you know, like even in school, like, you know, what's Counting Crows, like, R.E.M., like these are what my teachers were listening to, you know, like, and they would play the shit.
And those were the cool teachers.
Yeah. Like, let me put you into some shit. Yeah.
Do you know R.E.M.?
R.E.M.
Yeah.
Everybody hurts. Now fill out your Scantron and turn it in.
I was the English teacher.
Is that what you thought that was English?
No, I mean,
English literally. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously, man.
I don't see no math teacher giving me the
English
REM
teachers were the ones.
Sure. History, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. History, but yeah.
The classes that required a little individuality in their presentation.
Exactly. They you get to see a little bit of taste what the working with.
So when did you start playing drums, though?
I started playing drums when I was 12. So yeah, I was into hip hop, doing stuff, beating around on the tables, and just beatboxing and breakdancing, everything. And then eventually, I was like, I want to play drums. And I got into middle school, and that was the only thing that they had left to play. I joined school band. I wanted to play sax. No more saxophones. So then I just saw
interesting. So you wanted to play like the old style.
I want to serenade and I'm about to get some chicks.
Yeah, with the saxophone.
The sax, dude. I can pull up anywhere, play.
What was being played in the house?
Frankie Beverly and Maze, Earth, Wind & Fire, Curtis Mayfield, New Edition, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
Stevie Wonder was huge in my house. Prince, a little bit, but it was kind of like, you know, that box that room you go, like, don't ever go in there.
Yeah.
You know? That was like Prince in my
grown
mom.
Up box?
Yeah, like he's weird.
Oh, really?
But
she liked it.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it was like, dang. It was kind of like you don't go there.
You
but
knew it was there. You could see the cover
for sure. Yeah. And my stepdad, that was one thing though. He was for sure good for. He was a Prince fanatic, so that was how I got introduced to Prince. So,
and that was unique for the time. The way he put music together.
Prince?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It's great, right?
Dude, nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get hip till older, though. I wasn't more Michael Jackson, you know, Stevie Wonder.
Yeah,
that was more my palate.
Yeah.
But when I got older, I saw him like, oh, this is actually the dude.
Right.
He is the golden child. How he came in? Like, he came in the game, young as fuck.
Yeah.
Doing it his way on the androgynous tip.
Yeah.
And you see everybody was like, there was no real rules, you know, you're dressing with the makeup, tight everything. But black dude coming in, I don't give a fuck. I'm prettier than your finest girlfriend and I can play every instrument and I'm producing and I'm telling the label, fuck off, I'm doing this shit.
You loved him.
Dude, punk, he was punk, new way, everything.
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 And he was only 3 inches tall.
Just a little guy. And that's why he was that talented. All that condensed talent.
Had a lot to prove, man.
You got a lot to prove, man. Yeah. You ain't taking no shit when you're that short. You're riding motorcycles in
your long purple coats.
Exactly, man.
Yeah.
And man, I trip out on how experimental and how like new wave and rock his early stuff was. Like, you know, I trip out on some of the content as well, what he was talking about. He's got a song called Sister where he's talking about getting turned out by his sister and fucking his sister, and that's how he got so weird.
Yeah, or that's what did it? Do you think
she's the reason for my sexuality?
Is that a real story?
My sister never gave a shit. You need to play that song. I'm gonna play music.
I gotta go find it.
It's a song on a Dirty Mind.
Yeah,
classic album. One. I don't know if that's.
But it's one of those ones where you're like, is that true?
Is it true? It might be. It makes a lot of sense.
Because I learned, like, I always assume that when I talk to songwriters, which I do sometimes, you know, that every song they write is about them, and then I learned it's not.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. It's not, you know, how much
the dude down the street.
Yeah, dude down the street, a dude I made up.
Exactly.
You know, some, you know, other point of view that I was trying to explore.
Yep.
So Prince blew your mind.
Still does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it still does.
So you start playing drums.
Start playing drums in the school. I was about to quit because it was boring. I didn't want to read music. Then I get to the house. My stepdad, again, he's has a drum kit at the house randomly. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I see the drum kit. I'm like, oh, okay, a drum kit.
It was, oh, so he just had it there and you just knew it was out in the garage something?
He knew I was, no, he just got one. And okay. He knew I was playing drums in the school band, but it was like single drum, snare, and then a bass drum.
Right.
And he knew I was playing, so he's like, oh, I'm going to get a kit and, you know, show him what's up. So when I got home from school, he was banging on the kit.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. And you know, he was on the kit playing some drums, Prince stuff.
Yeah.
And then
so he could play pretty good.
He could fool around, you know, enough little basics. And then he let me get on the kit, and I just started messing around. And nothing ever came that natural to me.
Uh huh.
Like, it was just like boom, right away.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You felt it.
Figuring it out, and then boom, I was playing a groove, and then my mom comes out, she starts dancing. I'm like, okay, this is what I'm gonna do. right then I knew, you know? She never danced like that. She just workaholic.
Yeah.
She came out in her pajamas and was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You play drums? You play drums now? That's exactly what she said. I'm like, yeah.
She's like,
all right, I got some records. I want you to learn how to play this. And she started telling me, yo, play this, Archie Bell and the Drills, play this, you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to learn how to play this, you can play. And that's all
what
I did.
What other ones?
A bunch of James Brown stuff. What else did I play? I played a lot of soul and a lot of whatever was on the radio until my god sister came over and was like, you need to go to church. And that's where you're going to learn how to play.
Those James Brown records are good, though.
So good.
I mean, there's like 100 of them. Like, I keep picking up these old James Brown ones, and you look at those covers, you're like, what the fuck is this one?
Yes.
Just called Hell or something.
Yeah. That was the thing too. People could just put out music like so many, like we're, and then the cover art,
the best.
That's how you pick records now. It's like, this looks sick.
You do your own cover art?
In a sense, I'm very involved, but I work with artists. You know,
yeah.
But I'm very into it. Yeah, I worked with you know, Dewey Sanders on the first two, and then this other one from this other talented artist, Simone Chalar from Germany.
Yeah,
I like collage artists.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I like mixed media artists. I love it. I like, you know, putting effort into the artwork because when that's how I used to look for music, you know, or even books or anything. I just
flipping through those bins.
This looks sick. This can't be corny. Like, look at this shit.
Pull you right in. Yeah. But you knew when they were corny. But even sometimes.
Hell yeah, you know.
But sometimes the corny ones, you're surprised.
Well, I mean, everyone gets the laying down, right. You know, that one, everybody was doing that. So you kind of have to check those out. But that was the thing to do.
The
so.
Hey Baby covers. Yeah, hey, what's baby. Up, baby?
Cursive writing, chest hairs out.
Yeah. So you're playing with the James Brown, then your sister says you got to go to church?
You got to get your ass to church.
That's where you're going
to
learn how to play?
Spirit, you're going to find the best of everything there. So I was like, all right, I never been to church. My mom never really took us like that.
No, and her dad was a pastor?
That was probably why.
He scared her away. Enough of that shit.
But she's very, still is very religious, but she was just a workaholic, honestly. She was never home.
What was her gig?
She ran her own produce company.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
In Oxnard?
Yep. Yeah, she started it. Somebody handed it over to her. You wanna run this strawberry stand?
Yeah.
She was like, fuck it. Yeah. She was dropping out of college and didn't really know what she was going to do. She had kids and she was like, fuck it, I'll do this. And then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Like what? Berries and
strawberries? Just strictly strawberries.
All strawberries.
Yep. And she went in, and just, you know, distributed independently to all the restaurants. And, you know, she was doing at one point doing Ralph's and like the Cocos and Carols on.
Oh, really?
Still, but yeah.
And it was her company.
She was her company.
No shortage of strawberries in the house.
No shortage. You know, but then again, you know, we never had it. We were just like, fuck strawberries, man.
Oh, no, really? We're done with strawberries.
I don't want Cheetos. I want, you know, cup of noodles.
So you go to church?
Go to church. She takes me to church and I'm hooked. I'm set on the Lord. My mind was set on the Lord.
That quick?
That quick.
Really?
Yeah, I was
nothing to do with the music?
It was the music.
It was
the music, yeah. But then I knew, I was like, okay, how do I get in this? You know, what's going on? Okay, I got to get baptized. Okay, I got to believe. Got to believe. Okay, oh yeah, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just like, whatever it takes, because I want to be here every day so I can get better at the drums. I want to learn these songs. I want to play gospel music.
So you played in
music.
The gospel band in the church.
Yeah.
Old school.
It was contemporary gospel music. I went to like a Southern Baptist church in Oxnard. Where, you know, Oxnard is mostly Latinos and whites.
Yeah.
But where I was going to church was probably, you know, where all the black population is in the whole city, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so we were going and playing, you know, gospel music. So,
standing up and clapping kind of gospel music?
Shouting.
Yeah.
You know, people screaming and running around and dancing and some of the most intense music and energy ever. Like, you know,
well, yeah,
you have your old, you know, old school kind of sound and stuff, but yeah. Modern gospel stuff? Forget about it, dude.
Yeah,
you'll go through like five genres in one song.
Yeah,
you know, switch ups and all these different hits and breaks and grooves you have to hit. You know,
uh-huh.
People know what's up about gospel for sure, and so that's where I came up. That's
and you got all that Jesus energy going through it.
Got all of it, you know,
yeah.
all that spirit. Because yeah. You know, you're not supposed to do it for no form and fashion. I remember D'Angelo said that, but you're not supposed to. It's not supposed to be about you. You know what I'm saying? It's the opposite of like rock and roll. Or like it's like no, I need to open myself up, let God flow and. It's a miracle. This is not me, y'all.
You're a vessel.
I'm a vessel for God. You know, so
yeah.
that was the whole thing. Yeah. You know, that's how I came up. So it was like, all right, you know, like.
And you felt it. You got it.
I felt it, man. And also too, it was dope because I got to play with musicians that were like, when you're feeling it too much, you know, hey, calm down.
Yeah.
They do this. They touch. They have the pocket on their shirt and they play the pocket, bro.
Yeah.
And that was like the main thing. So
stay in the pocket.
Stay in pocket, bro. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear all that shit. Like, yeah. She used to tell me.
You're the groove guy,
the
show off. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
you let me go off on the keys. Right, yeah.
He's
all right.
Up on the fills, drummer
yeah,
guy.
You hold down. You hold me down. All right. We need you to hold it down. And I'm 12 years old, you know? So it's like, I got all kinds of puberty. I got all kinds of shit going on. I want to just rock out. And that was cool for me. It was just like, kept me, you know, gave me that foundation to like work, you know, follow direction and stuff.
And working with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like to, you know, get that, the unit going, right?
Absolutely.
The drummer's like so fucking important. Like there's some guys who can't swing.
Exactly, to save their lives.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you can feel it and stuff. Like,
but you know, I can't play, when I try to play like alternative rock, like the white boy type of like more stiff song or like any like that kind of feel,
can't
it's hard
help
for
yourself.
Me to do that shit. I'm too much swing.
You can't help yourself.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's different.
You find the pocket.
If I try to play a Metallica song, you know, it's, you know, it probably wouldn't work.
Yeah, you're going to play it with a little swing.
It's going to have a little too much grease on it. And so it's like, I have a lot of respect in that too, you know? It's like, you know, everybody's got their own groove.
Well, it's like the swing, like the rock is, you're ahead of it, and then the swing is you're behind it, right? You're kind of pushing it along.
Yeah. I mean, even that early rock, yeah, exactly. That shuffle, that's a shuffle, that's blues, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, right.
But that's totally it,
yeah.
You know? But it's like, even the rock stuff, you know, like, especially the old stuff, the classic rock, that shit got grease to it, man. It's like, they're not playing like all
stiff.
Oh, yeah. It's like.
Even like it was on Rolling Stones, you know, like, because Charlie Watts is on top of it, but like, he can really fucking swing,
he's
man.
He's digging in, you know? Yeah, all those dudes, man.
That thing, that clapping, I saw, you know where I saw that? I had to learn how to do that?
Yeah.
I was watching an interview with Dizzy Gillespie.
Okay.
Right, and he was just talking about it, and he just started doing that with his hand. I'm like, I gotta learn how to do that with my hand.
Yes, man. I love that, man.
Yeah. Do you listen to jazz stuff?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Like, it's wild, right?
It really is, man. It really is, dude. Like, that kind of music.
Who's
like,
that cat you work with, the sort of a jazz legacy? He's related to Alice Coltrane, and like he's a producer.
Flylo?
Lotus.
Yes. What a weirdo.
Yeah, yes. I got it. Like, I was looking, I was poking around like stuff that you worked on, and I was like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Because I've talked to Kamasi, and I want, what is his bass player's name? Thundercat?
Yes.
Like, it's like, what the fuck?
That's my bro. Yes, Thundercat is a. Yeah,
have you worked with him?
Yeah, I work with him too much. He's one of my best friends.
That five string bass?
Mm-hmm.
That last record, the double record, the 10 inch, like that, it's like a funkadelic record?
Drunk?
Yeah. Holy shit, man.
He's a maniac. And he's like a anime buff. Like he watches all the superhero movies, and he's just like.
Full on nerd?
Full on nerd. Huh. Black nerd, jazz. Just
freak.
Crazy freak.
Well, there's that whole crew of those guys from over there in South Central, right?
Yes.
Like Kamasi and that whole gang, their dads are involved.
Yes.
They got a whole jazz crew
there. They're like trying not to like get shot at, and they're playing jazz music, and they're into anime.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine those cards being dealt to you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good. It's good.
It's amazing.
Well, I think they not unlike you're bringing the instruments into hip hop, they are fighting for the survival and relevance of jazz.
Absolutely. And they single-handedly brought it back.
They did. Great.
Yes, yes.
I mean, those Kamasi records, I mean, to put out a record called Epic and it's three fucking records and it's your first record.
Pure jazz.
Right, but it's sort of like, deal with this.
Mm-hmm. That's really what it should be. It's like all or nothing.
I think so.
You know? If you're going to be all the way that, do it. If you're going to be all the way this, do it that way.
So did you play the drums all the way through then? So when you started doing your first stuff, like when were you starting to make records or make tapes or whatever you made?
Like, well, in high school, I made my first demo. And by the time I was a senior, I had like my own mixing board, mic, and like a little studio of my own.
Like
and
an 8-track mixer?
It was a digital Roland mixer. So this is around the time Pro Tools was just coming out. There was no real software stuff. So it was that in between time. So it was an actual hard board gear, like a mixer, and you could print straight to CD.
Right.
It was digital though.
Oh, so you had a CD burner?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And I was making my demo and I sold it around school and
that to make a cover?
Yeah. Yep.
And you were the guy with the stack?
Okay. I was the dude.
How much? $3?
I was the ladies man, you know? Yeah. $3, you know? $2 for the ladies is nothing.
Or just give them away.
Here, here, take this, you know?
Yeah, and drop them off at some radio station.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The local radio station.
What was that one called? What was the first one you made?
Oh, my first tape was called Have You Seen My Uncle? My sister was having all these kids, and by the time we were already in high school, I was in high school, but she was, you know, older, but she had kids and they were always at the house, and that's what I went with.
Have you seen my uncle?
It was
it a big hit at high school?
It was a big hit. You know, it was rave reviews. This high school paper wrote a great review on it.
Did they?
That's nice.
So you felt it.
I was buzzing hard.
Yeah.
You know, I felt it. I could feel myself bubbling. I knew I was going to get signed at any minute.
Yeah.
And I was taking meetings, you know, I was going around and I was going.
Were you?
Yeah. It's funny because right when my parents got put down, it was like that. I was getting some, you know, meetings with labels. I was going to Atlanta and I was meeting all the big labels and stuff.
Who were they then? Who were the big labels?
It was like Arista and I was meeting with BMG Publishing and Atlantic and all these different, you know.
And you're like 18, 17?
Yeah, 17. Yeah.
And they're like, we got one.
We got one. Yeah, we got a little sucker that
little
we can
wizard.
Yeah, that we can
take
work
advantage
and
of,
take
right.
advantage of pretty much. And I was doing all these meetings, but I was very distracted. Like my both my folks were in prison. My sisters were breaking their necks to try to figure out how they're going to take care of me and my little sis, and I didn't want to stress them. So I was very anxious to move out and try to. I thought I was going to get signed. I'm about to be famous. I'm about to take care of my family. It's all good.
Yeah. Why didn't you?
10 years later, signed. Nothing.
Heartbreak, the heartbreak.
It was just wasn't time, you know. It was a timing thing. I think this is in 2004, and I was in this transitional period of the music industry.
From what to what?
From CDs and from the way people were hearing music and receiving it. It was all going in a more digital direction.
Right.
So now it was going into MySpace music you know, people were downloading. That was a big thing back then.
I remember,
people are legally downloading. Oh, shit, you know, like now we can't charge people $30 for, you know, double disc CDs or anything like that. You know, like they're making a lot of money from
the labels are freaking out.
The labels are freaking
Everything's
out.
Everything's free.
Yeah, but nobody was, you know, the labels weren't, they could have made a DSP back then, you know, but they I don't think they were really taking it serious.
Right.
So all these different companies were coming up.
What
under
was that
them.
Big one?
Napster?
Napster.
Yeah, Napster was going on all these different things, you know. So I was just like, you know, someone that was making beats and making my music and stuff, but I wasn't a gangster rapper. I didn't have anything, you know, I was really just making
You weren't a character.
And I didn't have anything that they could really market. He wasn't a thug. And,
right.
It was boring for them. And this is when, like, in the height of, like, crunk music, Little John and all this stuff. And that's really what they wanted me to make music like. And I immediately just got turned off by that.
Well, it still seems that even, like, on the new record, it seems like almost on a couple of your records, you kind of draw this distinction between people who are pretending to be that and people who are really that. And, you know, like, in, like, does it even matter anymore?
Right. Exactly. Exactly, man.
Everything's changing.
Absolutely, man. Like,
so you didn't fit the mold and you weren't going to make yourself fit the mold. You just stuck with your own shit or did you actually...
I quit.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, fuck it.
You were done in high school?
I was done because I was like, if I'm not signed right now, fuck it, what the fuck, I'm a loser. Like, I'm 18 years old and I don't have a $1 million record deal. Like, it didn't happen. It's over. It's over.
So what'd you do?
I got a job.
Doing what?
A few things. I sold Vans shoes.
At a Vans store?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then that didn't work. I worked at a library.
Got some free shoes though, right?
I got free shoes. Yeah. I got free everything wherever I worked for sure. I was getting out with a whole thing for sure.
You worked at a library?
I worked at a library. It was like a warehouse actually where they sold, it was an online store.
Yeah.
And I worked at the warehouse where the books were at. So I had to just go around. And
that's not good. Great.
Came up on some books though.
So, but were you bitter?
I was a bit bitter. I was a bit, like, damn. The times it would hurt was when I was working these shitty jobs and my boss would be like, dude, like, they would catch wind that I was, like, did music or...
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you're talented. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
As they're giving me my schedule, you know?
Right.
And then I just be like, fuck, what the fuck am I doing here?
No music?
Like,
you weren't doing anything?
I wasn't. I was like, fuck that. I'm done. I'm just gonna get a job. My parents are in prison. I want some stability.
How did music come back?
This girl I was dating.
Yeah.
She was like, you can sing. Like, what are you doing? Like, she's a singer as well.
Where'd you meet her?
Church.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She was a bit older than me.
And you stopped playing at the church too?
I got back into playing in church. So I was working a job and I ran into the old organist player.
Oh yeah.
And he was like, where the fuck you been? And I was like, dude, like, you know what's going on. I'm like, shit's crazy out here. And then so he's like, dude, come back to the church. I know you still, hopefully you can still play, you know. Yeah. And I could always still play drums, you know. So I went back and started playing and I got back into it, like, you know, at least playing drums, you
right
know? And I was shedding back in with him and it was just me and him. And then the girl came back from college and she saw me also too. I was really fat growing up and I had lost a bunch of weight. Now I'm thinking about it, I put all my energy towards that.
Losing weight,
getting a job.
How fat were you?
I was at my heaviest, like maybe like 270.
That's, oh man, so.
Yeah, and I was short, and I'm, you know. Not,
lugging around a lot of weight.
Lugging around, moving the weight from state to state. And I was just over it.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, by the time I got out of high school, I was like, I haven't gotten laid. I was like, nothing. I was like, everything must change. Fuck this.
And you lost all, what, it was 100 pounds?
Yeah. Lost a bunch of weight, changed the diet up. I just had bad eating habits. Like,
yeah.
I thought it was normal to eat fast food every day.
And a lot of people do. That's what keeps that industry alive.
I just thought it was a normal thing.
Yeah.
Never drink water.
Yeah. So you lost the weight, got back on the drums. College girl
met
comes.
The girl.
Yeah.
She starts giving me a little confidence.
Yeah.
I'm feeling myself. Boom, I'm back in it. I knocked the dust off the old mixing board.
Yeah.
I start writing again. But I'm doing it my way. I'm not trying to chase no sound or anything. I'm just like writing songs that I've all like been, you know.
Were you singing a lot then too?
I was starting to experiment. So I was finding my voice. So, you know, I guess you can call it singing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I started singing more. She was giving me a lot of confidence boost to sing.
And she was a musician as well?
She was, yeah. She sang in the church. I played drums. She was in the praise team.
Uh-huh.
And she was an excellent singer. And so she was like, yeah, man, you need to sing. You need to get back into it. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, what happened with that?
She went to law school. And then I was kind of still like on the fence.
Yeah.
And I went to culinary school first, cut myself the first day and was bleeding everywhere. I was like, okay, fuck that. I'm just going to go.
Oh, you're going to be a chef?
I thought I was going to be a chef.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Thought I was going to get a nice job at the Olive Garden, figure it out.
Wow, that's where all chefs go.
Exactly. You know, earn my keep, go through the garden, yeah, if you will.
And you cut your finger and that was it. That was like the one... I mean, when you didn't get your record deal, you're like, I'm out. I cut my finger, done.
I take everything as a sign, you know?
Yeah.
Fuck this.
Not meant to be a cook.
Yeah, and my teachers told me that even the teacher at the culinary school, he was like, get the fuck out of here, dude. Like, you cut yourself the first day. Like, so I was like, all right, bet. I'm going to go to a music college. Like, at the very least, I can get a job playing drums.
Right.
What you the fuck am I doing? So I went to music college, Musicians Institute.
Oh, yeah? And where's that at?
It's in Hollywood, in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard.
Is it good?
It's dope. It's like ITT Tech for musicians.
Like 2 years?
Yeah. About 2 years. I was working there longer than I actually attended there.
You worked there as well?
Doing what? I was working there as a TA. Oh. So I couldn't afford it. I had to drop, and then the teachers called back, and they were like, why don't you work here as a TA? You can play drums for the students. The vocal students. We need people to play for the classes, you know?
So they must have thought you were good and believed in you, and they didn't want you to go.
Really,
what happened to the lawyer girl?
The lawyer girl went off and to go to UCLA Law School. We split up. She ended up actually, you know, dating one of my buddies.
Yeah.
And they ended up having a kid and living happily ever after.
Oh, still? You guys weren't married, though.
Not still.
Yeah,
you know I know that.
Yeah.
We're not together anymore.
Did you guys get married or you weren't married?
No, we didn't get married.
Okay. Okay.
I'm married now, though. Shout out to my wife, my beautiful wife. Only wife.
I don't want to cause any trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's just say I have one wife. That's how it always been. That's how it always will be. Okay.
Wow.
That's just my friend. The other one.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. She's got you. She got good. Good for you.
She's got a grasp.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, but it was cool. And then I got back into music. Fully on fire at the school.
She a musician too?
Straight from Korea. She was coming in.
She's Korean.
Mm-hmm. And she was going there for vocals and piano. And we met in one of the classes. Yeah.
She still sings?
She still sings.
On your records?
Not on my records.
Oh, how's that?
She has her own group.
We're
one of those kind of like, you do your thing,
cool?
I do mine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
It's better that way?
We're complete opposites. It is.
Oh, that's
and
good.
We have our common grounds, you know.
That's great. All right, so now you're teaching kids, you're playing with the kids.
Yeah,
it's
teaching,
building up, you're still making your own shit.
Yeah, making my own stuff, and I started my own band now at the school. So I'm like getting the connections, I'm like, you know, learning a bunch of music.
How many pieces, like what kind of band?
It was
what
like five of us. So it was called Breezy Lovejoy Band.
Breezy Love.
Breezy was my nickname since I was in high school.
Breezy Lovejoy.
And I added that, tacked on the Lovejoy. And when I got to the college, I was scouting out musicians to play the demo that I had, this new demo of like new songs that I've had. And I got with a bunch of musicians and they loved the songs. And we started playing dive bars and pay to play in Hollywood and playing for other artists, which is how we made ends meet.
Backup band?
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Cover band, backup band.
What kind of stuff you playing?
We were playing a lot of singer songwriters that have money to blow.
Okay, they needed backup. You recorded with some people then?
Yeah, we did a lot of session work.
Yeah.
For the kids at the school, and then a lot of session work for these kids that got record deals and they needed bands, and so you're really
jumping right in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good because you're learning how the business works.
Mm-hmm.
You're learning how to lead a band.
Exactly.
You know, and to orchestrate, compose, put shit together.
Yep. Making my way around the city as like, you know, we were the band that if you needed a band, you could pay us $150 and we learned your whole catalog.
Yeah.
You know?
Really? Like what kind of acts? Any kind?
A lot of hip hop, a lot of soul acts, a lot of singer songwriters.
Right.
A lot of people that they just got a record deal.
Right.
And they got these showcases that got to play. That's the kind of gigs we were getting. And then there was clubs like the Little Temple bar. I don't think it's called that anymore, but there was these spots where the promoters would hire us and we play for all kinds of bands, all kinds of groups. We were just like the house band for open mics and stuff.
Right. Is that where you got the idea to do the covers record?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we were always playing covers, so that was just like, yeah, fuck it, let's play these interpretations and put them
what
out.
Was on that record? You can't find it. I couldn't find
cover
it.
Cover art was we did Seven Nation Army by White Stripes. We did Heart of Gold by
Neil Young.
We did The Beatles, Blackbird.
How come I couldn't find the record?
It's on. You gotta go to Bandcamp or SoundCloud or something.
Okay.
One of those.
And it's called Cover Art.
Uh-huh.
Under which name?
Cover Art under Anderson .Paak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. One of the first projects I did under that.
Now I gotta listen to it.
What we did was we flipped. The idea was that we're gonna take all these songs by white artists and put like the soul and grease on them because you know in the '50s and
get in the pocket.
Yeah. It was just like you know kind of spinning that whole thing where how in the '50s you had a lot of white artists that did black music and then when they did it, it went straight to radio and became huge records.
That's
you know?
Right.
So I wanted to do the opposite of that in a way, and so that was the whole idea with
gonna
that.
Gonna black up the white stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. It never left SoundCloud, but you know, I was early on it.
Wait, how could it not be released now?
Hey, it's never too late. I gotta get the mechanicals and all that shit because they're not my songs. But it's not hard. I just gotta put some energy.
None of those guys really mind if you make them an extra buck.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Except for Neil.
Neil
might be a little particular.
I would think that maybe he'd be. I don't know. You know, I talked to him once. He's an odd guy.
Yeah, but, I would be a prick if someone tries to do my shit over.
I know, but it seems like it happens all the time. And if those guys own the publishing, what do they care?
Exactly.
I mean, it's not on you.
That's how I got my first plaque.
How?
I put out a song on Venice called Might Be, and it did what it did. And then another kid took the song and remixed it.
Yeah.
It took our version and then added his version of our version, pretty much. A remix, you know?
Yeah.
A cover, if you will.
Yeah.
And then put that out and it started booming and then started getting radio play.
Right.
And then my label calls and they're like, you know this kid? I'm like, no, what the fuck? Shut it down. It's my song. And they're like, well, you're getting all the publishing and like, you might as well let it go because it's number one at radio. And I'm like, fuck that. Damn.
And that's when you learned how to write songs for people.
Exactly.
You got past your pride and you're like, how much?
There's more than one way to do it, man. Do it. Any way you can. Hey, I love it.
So how do you like, how many records did you do under that Breezy Lovejoy moniker?
Shit, I did. I think it was two projects,
and those
three projects maybe,
and they were all with the full band.
I was working with my band. I was working with producers and stuff. I was doing a lot of beats too. Yep.
How does that work? Because I noticed like this is one of those areas where I'm not educated. Like I had the Beastie Boys in here a couple weeks ago, and I just felt like an idiot because like they're going through the whole history of what they grew up with and the music that moved them. I'm like, who?
Yeah,
what? You know, like an idiot. Because, you know, you get into your own thing and you know what you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you work with all these different producers, because like even on this record, it seems like every song is a different crew.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work in hip hop? Because it seems like the producer is intrinsic to the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like whereas like with rock, they'll do their thing.
Yeah.
But it's usually on the artist. But it seems like it's more collaborative.
Right.
You're working with them to get what they their sound. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I like to think on this album, probably the main producer, my co-producer, if you will, on this album was Dr. Dre. We worked with a lot of different musicians, my band included, a lot of different producers and everything. But one thing we did was all the songs most of them were done in one room with me and Dre there.
For Oxnard.
Uh-huh. And we're utilizing whoever's in the room.
And you're on his label now?
Yes.
But did he work with you on either the other two or is this a new relationship?
This was the first one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep, Malibu was pretty much like halfway done by the time I was working with him, and then he dropped his project before, and that's the one he put me all over Compton, and then I was like, oh shit, all right, I think I should drop this project now. Yeah. It's probably a good time, and I wasn't signed to him, so I was able to drop it independently.
So after you do the Lovejoy stuff, and you're doing the cover album, and you're back in, like, you know, what was the big break? What makes you sort of, before you meet Dre, why Venice, and what are all these albums, do they have themes, or are they just...
So I switched over. I made a decision to switch over and go by Anderson .Paak. So I gave up Breezy Lovejoy. My mentor at the time, Brian Lee, who told me that I should actually come on this podcast. And then, like, he hit me to you, pretty much. And now I'm, like, a huge fan now.
Oh, thanks.
He was like, fuck all this other shit, man. You need to go on that motherfucker show. And I'm like, all right, bet. And then I started listening, and it's great. But he's totally that guy, you know, put me on a bunch of different shit. But he was the one that was like, dude, screw Breezy Lovejoy. That shit's corny. Just go by, you know, you should switch it up. You've been doing it for 6-7 years. And one of the things he was like, you really going to meet Dr. Dre and tell him your name is Breezy Lovejoy?
I mean, like, you know, Q-Tip is Q-Tip.
Yeah. True. That's really true.
I mean, I don't think it doesn't seem like the hip hop world is that judgmental about silly names.
I'm very influenced. So yeah. So I was like, you know what? It's out. Reese Ledger is out.
Well, you might as well use your real name.
I'm Anderson Paak. It's me. No name, no game. Real name. So, and we started going in. And so, like, I spent like 6-7 months with Brian in his apartment. And he's
a producer.
He was not a producer. He was really on the tech side and on the business side. And knew a lot about YouTube and, you know, how to blow artists up on YouTube and make viral moments.
I get it.
And he was working with another artist, Dumbfounded,
a tech consultant.
So he saw things from that side.
Brand master.
Yeah, brand master. He's like, you're really talented, but it's going to take a lot more than that, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like, you need a work ethic. You need to get in a room and just work on you. You're playing drums. You're trying to do too much.
Right.
And you should simplify your life and just get in a room and make it easier for yourself. So you can make better decisions. So he turned his extra room into a studio, just one computer and a keyboard. And he was like, you can do everything yourself. And if you can't, learn how to do it.
And then he locked you in that room.
Locked me in the room. I was waking up early and I was doing music. And that's the first time I started working with like whiteboards and like drawing out what I wanted for myself and
really
being serious with it. I never done that. Setting goals and shit.
So whiteboards, huh?
Yeah.
Like with the markers?
Yeah.
And like, what would you put on the whiteboard? Like, you
know, lyrics
or ideas or?
So first I would brainstorm. So I'd be like, what do I want to sound like?
Yeah.
What are the artists I even like? What is my ideal definition?
And who came up?
So I went back and I went through like the 60s and I looked up Sam Cooke and I looked up like Stevie Wonder and I went through Marvin Gaye and I looked up like people that had like these real distinctive voices,
because
I knew I had like a unique voice, but I didn't have like, if you will, like a pretty, you know, singing kind of voice.
Did you listen to any of that Soul Stirrer stuff, the Sam Cooke, the old gospel stuff?
Yes. Oof. Soul Stirrer. Yes,
it's so wild with his voice, because like even when he was in that gospel crew, his voice was so unique. Even when he was singing with three of them,
it just cut through.
It's wild,
beautiful
right?
melodies.
Uh-huh.
Otis Redding, you know, James Brown.
Yeah.
So I just started listening to all of those guys, and then I started you know, checking out the new dudes, you know, even like, you know, the dudes that were killing it in my era too, you know, like the Bruno Mars and Kendricks and, you know, people that I saw that had integrity, that were musicians, you know, that I knew that's the lane I wanted to go in. So
What about all that early, that mid-period hip-hop, that, you know, Tribe Called Quest?
Mm-hmm. Of course. So
that was just there.
That was like, you know,
already
engraved
in
me,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was just more so like, what the stuff that I miss, you know,
right.
The Beatles, you know?
Sure.
As simple as, I never was gotten into them, and then I got hit to them later, you know? And, you know, then that opened up a whole portal, you know? So...
So that's what was on the whiteboard.
Yeah,
influences.
It was just influences. What do I want? What do I want? I want a Grammy, of course. You know, I would love to have my own studio. I would love to have a car. I would love to have health insurance. I would love to get my own place to live. I didn't have
that was one column.
Yeah,
place to live,
yeah,
health insurance,
live.
Grammy.
Yeah, Grammy, $1 million, or actually it was just like $1,000. You know, back then, you know, realistic goals. You know. And so that was it. And it was like, you know, the people that I wanted to meet and, you know, how I wanted to look and everything. So that was all the things
you
that
were putting yourself together.
Yeah, I was putting it up. I was putting it together. And then I would just go in there. And one thing he told me, too, was like, learn how to do it by yourself. You know, don't try to be as less dependent on people as you can. Because when, you know, even when you get to the point where you don't have to do it yourself, you at least can tell people how it's done. You know what
right.
you want, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was that. And so I did that for 6 months, came out of it. Okay, I'm down. I want to change my name, Anderson Paak.
Yeah.
Boom. I keep the dot there. So I always remember that it takes work ethic and detail to get anywhere. It's about the things you
that's
say no
the dot?
To. Yeah, that's what the dot represents.
Mm.
The dot before the P.
So, but what were you recording at that time? What did that
become? I was recording what would later become Malibu and what would later become...
Was Malibu first or Venice?
Venice was first.
So you'd already done that?
Yep. So I had came out of that whole thing. It was like 6-7 months of that, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a year or so. And I had the bulk of Malibu done after I came up with that. And
yeah.
So I was hesitant, though, to put that out because I didn't think people would receive it well.
What, Malibu?
Yeah.
Why?
It was different for me. It was very revealing. It was like more personal, and a lot of the songs were very understated and not overproduced. And the stuff that I was listening to at the time was very dance and like heavy bass.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get people turned up.
Yeah.
And I didn't know people were going to turn up to The Bird or, you know, all these songs. And I didn't really realize that these were actually the songs that really that you should be doing. But I wanted to...
I noticed that with the bass in my car. Mm-hmm. Like even if I don't have it turned up that much.
Yeah. I wanted my little nieces, I wanted my the homies to like it, you know?
Yeah,
and then they're like, what the fuck? Every time I played my music for people, they were like, this weirdo shit, you know? Like, and then they turn back on whatever the fuck they're listening to.
Really?
You know?
I guess I don't listen to enough hip hop to, I didn't listen to anything you did and think like, nah, this stuff's out there.
Yeah. I mean, because you grow up, you know, you have a different palette. You know?
Yeah. But I mean, but it just sounds like, you know, good music.
Yeah.
But what are they judging on?
I think that at the time, like my...
This is the time of Malibu or Venice?
This is my music in general. Like when I used to play for my family members and stuff like that, they're like, you're talented. You're great. You're going to make it one day, you know.
Oh,
they
really?
They weren't bumping my shit, you know, but they were like, you're great. My sisters were my biggest fans, you know, but I could tell they didn't always understand where I was coming from.
Because you were being too honest?
No, I just think it was like, I think my influences were just a little different, and my music was left to them, I think, you know, like my early demo stuff.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of weird stuff, I think, to their ear.
Like what? What made it different, you know, like, you know, structurally or sound-wise than what they were used to? Like, what elements?
I guess it was maybe too lo-fi or even the topics, you know, that I was pulling from, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
My brother-in-law listens to people like E-40 and Sebo and real heavy gangster rap.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So it's too soft for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a little too, like, you know, what are you?
Are you a fucking weirdo? Yeah. Or, you know, that's pretty much it, you know? You're talented. You're great. It's going to work for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we'll let you know when the shit starts to slap, and, you know, we'll let you know, you know? And, you know, and by the time I got to Dre, now they're like fucking, you know?
Yeah, right. But yeah.
So, I was doing all kinds of stuff. And so, but I myself wasn't confident in what I was doing in Malibu at the time. So, and also too, I had been locked in this room and I wanted to just work with other people.
You wanted a band.
I wanted a band, I wanted to work with producers, I wanted to just talk and be, you know, get out of the cave.
Yeah. Well, if you're in a cave too long, you're going to do weird shit.
You'll stir. Yeah, exactly. But I needed that, you know? I needed to get ugly and do weird stuff to get comfortable with what I could do as an artist and find my voice.
Right, you took a risk.
Yeah, it was great.
You put yourself out there and people said like, all right.
Yeah. And also too, we got that album done and then we took it to places and they were like, oh, exactly, all right, well... And everybody was scared. Nobody was.
But they liked Venice.
No, nah. I couldn't buy a deal, bro. Like, not until I got to Dre. He was the only one.
And this is midway through Malibu that you've met Dre?
Yes. Yeah, I had already put out Venice, and I went back and worked with producers when I went and worked with Venice, and I wanted to do like a heavy hidden sound, more modern sound, if you will. And so I went back and did Venice, and then put that out. And then I was like, that's why I started calling it The Beaches, because I was like, okay, I'll give it a location so I can build up to these places. So Venice is kind of gritty. It's kind of,
and you open with beach sounds.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's SoCal. Yeah. It's the beach, and then we'll work our way up to Malibu. You know,
that's
a more mature sound. So
got it. And then that was the idea. Then back to Oxnard.
And then we'll go north. Keep going north.
Yeah,
and we'll take it home. You know.
So how do you meet Dre? Like, are you like what? You're working with pretty big producers already,
yes.
Right?
I was just working with. Yeah, I thought they were the biggest producers to me. You know, because they were the producers around in the city that were killing it. You know, people like Knowledge and people like Low and Taku, Toki Monsta, and K Tronada, Pomo. These are people, DJs and producers that's what we listened to,
right.
You know, and they were moving the needle for us. So I was excited to work with them, but Dre could give two shits, you know?
Yeah.
And so everybody was trying to get the music to Dre, you know, from what I hear now, you know, whether it was Ty Cannon or F. Gary Gray, the director, or my manager at the time. But honestly, until you get in the studio with him and he sees that you're capable, and you see that fire, that's when you're going to make him a believer.
How'd you get in the studio with him?
So I finally got in the studio with him because he was making Compton. He was doing the Straight Outta Compton soundtrack. And His two writers that he was working on the album with, King Mez and JT, were working on a song, and they said, we got to get this kid in here. So they got Ty to get me on the line, and Carrie Lynn, I was working with her, and she'll see, they got me over there, and I was, you know, skeptical. I didn't think it was going to work, and I got in there, and the first two people I meet were Dr. Dre and DOC.
Yeah.
And they give me a handshake, and they're like, dope, okay, cool.
Were you freaked out?
I was a little freaked out just because how tall and big they were.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, it was like, everything felt good that day. Like, everything felt like it was supposed to happen that day for some reason. I was feeling good.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, cool, I'm finally in the building. Like, all right. And they go back to watching the game, and I go in the studio, and I meet the writers, and they're like, yo, you're dope, man. We love your song Suede, and this and that. I'm like, oh, cool. I had this song called Suede out, and I was like, dope. They started playing me the music. I'm like, this sounds crazy. They're like, Dre's really going to put an album out, I promise, this and that. Yeah. I'm like, cool, man. Let me get on something, you know? And so they're like, hold on. Before we get you on this, let's play the song. Let's play Suede for Dre. And I'm like, wait, he's never heard the shit yet?
He didn't.
Fuck.
He just on there in a recommendation?
Yes. I'm like, let me get on the mic first. Let me get something. Because what if he doesn't like it? I don't want to get kicked out.
Yeah, yeah. Not now.
They bring him in the studio and they play him the record, and he plays the record three times in a row.
Yeah.
And he's like, let's work.
So yeah. I'm oh,
like,
really?
Yeah.
Let's was get it heavy?
Yeah.
Like, were you like, you're just sitting there?
Yeah.
And he's playing it again?
Yep. Again.
Because, I mean, I watch a documentary, so I get a sense it like, must be wild just to see him thinking, like listening and think. Yeah.
That's hard right there.
Yeah.
He does a thumbs up. AP. That's hard. That's gangster. That was gangster right there. Play that again. Yeah, so the third time goes around, he's like, all right, let's work. And I'm like, cool. So they play the beat, and I love it. It's just like this crazy, infectious bass line.
Yeah.
It's great. All in the Day's Work is what it ended up being.
For Compton?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, cool, let's do it. Let me get on the mic. And they got the mic set up just like this. There's no booth.
Yeah.
And everybody's in the room. So he's like, oh, you want to just hop on the mic? I'm like, yeah. Throws on the beat. I close my eyes, and I'm just like right out of a movie. Just like throw my headphones on.
Yeah.
The room gets silent. And I black out, literally. And when I open up my eyes, I see Dre. I see the whole room just going crazy. And I've been working with him ever since.
And were you just freestyle?
Yeah. It was freestyle, not really thinking about the words, just getting melodies and cadences and stuff, and just speaking in tongues, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it. And he loved it. He just loved the tone of my voice. He told me, you know, you got that pain in your voice. Like, one sounds like you.
See, finally the weird thing pays off.
It is. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Be confident in what you do in yourself, and that was it. And I knew I could do me at a point and like nobody else, so it was fun.
Because you'd already pushed yourself out there.
Yeah, that was it. I was already, you know, I had music out, plenty of music. I wasn't getting called in to write a verse for him or anything like that. They were like, they wanted me to do what I did, you know? And thank God I wasn't like chasing some thing or something else. I had no choice but to just do me. Nobody wanted to sign me or do anything. I was just the weirdo kid.
Right. Yeah. So that paid off. The weirdo.
It really did, man.
So did he do half of Malibu then?
No. So then I ended up camping out there, finishing up the rest of his record.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what was going to come out or anything. I didn't know if I was going to be on it or anything. And then all of a sudden I look on iTunes and the record's out.
Compton.
And I'm on six tracks. And they're like, he's the new Snoop and he's the new Nate Dogg and this and that. And it's just blowing up. And so I'm like, I was probably like 50% done with Malibu at that point. And now everybody's hitting my line. So now I'm like, all right, cool. I'm about to finish my fucking record now. And now I want to work with Knife Wonder and Malib, all these different, you know, high tech, access now, you know,
because
he's Dre's kid now. And I wasn't signed to Dre, granted, at this point. And now all the labels are coming, you know.
But he loved you.
Hey, what's up?
Blah, blah, blah.
He loved me, yeah. And he told me, he's like, you know, I don't know what you got going on, but I would love for you to, you know, come over here to Aftermath. And I was like, no question, you know, you're the only one that took a chance on me.
Yeah.
So that was a no-brainer. But I had one more album to go with this independent contract that I had with Steel Wool and with my own label and an art club.
Yeah.
So I had Malibu left to go, and so I finished it up. I got songs like Come Down and Hard to Stand a Chance and all these different, the second half of the records came later because I was, you know, I had the access now. I had the juice.
Yeah.
And I finished it up and I put it out. And then I've literally been on the road ever since.
Yeah.
That album came out and it was just like everyone loved it.
It broke.
I never would have thought it would do the things that it did, man. And then it did like really good in the licensing world. So we didn't have any real per se radio hits, but then like people were snatching it up for Google and then like ESPN and all these movies. Like it became that album. Like,
and that just is another part of the business to you. You don't have any problem with that.
Nah, I love it. Yeah, I love it, man.
Get it out there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I love it, man.
And you did an Apple commercial with what's her name?
FKA Twigs.
That album, her album's wild.
Yeah, she's a wild artist.
It's like she's only got that one record out. Like I got it a few years ago, and I saw the cover, and I'm like,
but her on the cover,
and I'm like, what's this? And I listened to it, and I'm like mystified.
Yeah, dude, that's some left field shit. That's the shit I was listening to, you know, like when we were doing all this stuff, you know.
So it's like
they were saying my stuff was left, and I'm like, listen to this shit, you know.
It's real. It's beautiful.
Yeah, dude,
I gotta pull that out again. It was one that because I used to get a lot of records sent to me from different labels, you know, because of the show, and I didn't know anything about anybody, but that's one of those times where I'm looking at that cover, and I'm like, who's this?
Mm-hmm.
What's she up to?
Absolutely, that artwork, man, that's it.
It gets you in.
You can
in.
Tell if he's a douche right off the top with the artwork.
So this record's with all you and Dre, and you got big people with you.
This is the big major label debut album, you know? This is like, boom, we got
How's
the budget.
Doing?
It's
When's
doing
it?
Great, man. I mean, it was a landmark, a milestone for me, you know, as far as like, if you want to talk about commercial success or whatever, like I charted, you know, it was like, you know, it hit, you know, top, you know, 20 or whatever on Billboard. It sold what it sold. And I think that the core fans that wanted Malibu 2 are probably a little upset about the album. I think
why because it's got more of an edge,
you know, I think it's just because maybe it wasn't what they were expecting. What, you know, it's so much, and we took like almost three years for to come out with the next one, so you people build all these expectations up, and that I don't know who's gonna live up to it.
Right, so they were there early, and they had this relationship with you, and they understood.
A lot of people
are
eager to hate, you know, and they see that.
Or be disappointed.
To be disappointed, he doesn't need any help, you know. I think that was the consistency from a lot of people.
So they thought you got overproduced or sold out or whatever.
Sounds forced. He's shallow now. It's all about the money. I've always been shallow. Always talked about pussy. Always talked about money. Always talked about these different things. You guys just
you were just a little more sad.
Exactly. You guys could be happy for me.
I'm what happy. You be happy.
Yeah. I'm not, happy times now,
I'm
guys.
Not, I'm not melancholy and longing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what this album was. I'm having a good time eating calamari.
Yeah.
You
man.
Know? And it's not. Nah, it's like, it's just.
Talking
it,
about tinting your windows.
Tinted
with
windows.
Tinder, with Kendrick.
My friend is Kendrick now. Texting Dr. Dre, like, this is my life now, guys. You gotta let it go.
Yeah.
And so it's just like embracing that, you know, like that whole deal. Like how do you make a record when you have everything now and you're traveling and just embracing those ideas.
Am I remembering right? Did Kendrick come out with you on Saturday Night Live?
Absolutely. Came out. Man, yeah. What a stand up guy. Comes out.
How'd you meet him?
I met him I guess somewhat through Dre. After Compton came out, he ended up texting me from, you know, I didn't have the number, and he said,
like, hey,
he sends
Kendrick.
Me a text. No, at the very end of the text, it says that, but he says, you know, the text starts off with, life's a trip.
Yeah.
I got introduced to your music a long time ago, but you're going under a different name, and I saw one of your videos, and it made me want to get more on top of my shit.
Oh, really?
And it's so crazy to see how you were able to turn around and to see your journey. Sincerely yours, Kendrick Lamar.
Wow.
And it was just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then after that, we just, you know.
You've been friends since?
Mm-hmm. Because
he's like a totally unique voice.
Absolutely.
My girlfriend loves him.
Man.
Yeah, those records are great.
Amazing.
But
artists.
Then like, but Snoop's in the.
Snoop.
Like Dre just called Snoop up and said, come play with this kid? How does that work?
Hell nah, man. You know, shit, dude. I think me and Snoop, I'm trying to think when we first met, but Uncle Snoop, man, you know, he took a real liking to me, man. He's just off top. Nephew, I love you, man.
Yeah.
You, I got you, man. Whatever you need, man. And, you know, and then he'd be hard to get a hold of after that. But, man, I sent him that record, and he was like, 2 minutes after I sent it to him, he's FaceTiming me from the gym.
Which one? Like the one he's on? The one he's,
that song, Nephew, you know I want to get on that. come on, man. When we doing it? If you start writing it now, it'll go by faster. So if you start writing it, man, you know. So I start writing a verse, and he come in and just laid it down right away. You know what I'm saying? It ain't nothing, dude. And he came in there and just, you got to have something about yourself in this industry. That's what he said. Yeah. You know, it's got to be something about yourself.
He's like a real Zen dude.
He is, man. Can you think, Dre too, to go through that, like you said, all those life times and still stay down to earth?
Yeah. And they are, huh?
Man, that is the most down to earth dude. One of the most down to earth dudes.
And
man,
how does Q-Tip get involved?
Q-Tip, you got to go to him. He's one of those cave master senseis.
Oh, really?
You got to go up the hill and travel up and go fight through the...
The jungle with a machete.
And finally, I'm here. Here's the tape, master. Is it good enough? No, it is trash. Come back again. Yeah, that was master's Q-Tip. You know, I was he reached out to me to work on the last Tribe Called Quest album, and
the new one, the Resurrection.
Yeah, the last one that came out.
Yeah.
And I went over to Jersey and got over in his lab, and we just right away, just like the connection was there.
Yeah.
You know, we just like got along, you know, real genuine relationships. And then, you know, we spend a lot of time just talking and listening to music. And yeah, of course, we made a bunch of records, but it was more so just like picking his brain and what you think of this. And, you know, just chopping it up.
Well, you're an open dude, you know, and you're not coming at him with the attitude. So, like, you know, and you come at him with respect and your own specific talent. They must love it.
Yeah, yeah.
The old dudes are a certain way, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have to work. You know, they don't have to do shit they don't want to do. They don't want to do anything that they don't want to do. So when they get fired up about something, it's dope.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Yeah. I like that cut too, the Sweet Chick one. Who's that guy?
You like that one? See, those are some of my Malibu fans were upset about that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, too dirty?
Yeah, I'm like, I love that one, dude. Yeah,
that's the weird. It's not even a deal with the devil, but you got that loyalty that you build up initially because people think they found you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then holding on to them when you make a bigger jump, you know, they'll bitch at first, but you'll probably hold on to 75%.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it hurts, you know, as an artist when you see them like, you're not the darling anymore. You can't, right?
Yeah, no.
Do you read the shit?
No, I can't do it. I can barely do Twitter anymore. I'm barely on Twitter because, like, the weird thing in the brain with your ego is that you see one fucking negative thing on any of a comment board, you know, Reddit, Twitter, whatever. In your mind, immediately, it's like the whole internet hates you.
Yeah.
But it's just one asshole.
It really is.
Even if it's 20 assholes.
Exactly.
Who cares?
Exactly.
And a lot of times, it's the same 20 assholes.
Yes.
Doing it over and over again, and it fucks your head up. And then when you really look at it, if you look at a comment board, it's like 12 people over and over again. And you're like, what am I...
That's so true.
What, my whole day's fucked up.
Exactly.
Because you think like, oh, these people don't like me. But go back and look. It's like, even if it's 30 people.
Right. Exactly.
You know, compare that to the number of records sold. Exactly. Like, what are you doing with your head?
Exactly. You're fucking your own self and doing a wrench in your whole shit.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they got you.
And then throws you off of your confidence and shit. So you can't read it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't have it. I don't have that shit on either.
And it seems like your audience is pretty broad.
Yeah.
You got all types of people.
Just people with good taste.
Yeah,
that's it. I think if anything, that's how you narrow down my audience. I've seen all kinds, like the nerds, the gangsters, the 9 to 5s, the internet, the whatever, the hype beast. I just listen to blues, but I like you for some reason, guys.
Me?
Yeah. I'm real talk, man. And that's what, when I think about when I was coming up, like, that's really what all I wanted was the respect, man.
And now your family's coming around.
And now they're finally, I got something for my nieces and my brother-in-law to bump.
Yeah. And your mom?
My mom loves it. My mom loves it. My mom loved Malibu. She loved Venice. You know, she loved a Yes Lord album. My mom lays it to me straight for sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She'll tell you?
I wasn't feeling that. And why did you say that? What did you say on this part? She's back checking and everything.
No shit.
Well, no, you know that. You know, yeah, she's on it, man.
She's got to be proud.
Yeah, for sure, man. She's super happy and proud.
Well, it was great talking to you, buddy.
Man, that went by quick. I loved it. Thank you.
Great talk. Good dude. As I said, Anderson's nominated for the Best Rap Performance at the Grammys this Sunday, February 10th, for his single Bubblin'. And the new record, Oxnard, is available and out now. You can get it wherever you get the music. I plugged in the Telecaster through this Echoplex pedal and into the old Fender amp, and I realized exactly what the Echoplex pedal and the Telecaster and the old Fender amp, what sound exactly they were supposed to make. This is That Sound. ¶¶
Boomer lives.
Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.